Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO11. 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 Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head, dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11.
Coming program today. Now, I'm sure that you all know by now, I really don't like talking about myself. And I don't like making things about me other than in the usual satirical, parodic, joking way. I like this program to be about you and the things that matter to all of us. The one thing that I know that has happened over the 31-plus years of this program is that there has been an incredible bond that has developed between all of you and me. Now, this program's 31 years old, and in that 31, there are people you hear them call all the time, and they've been listening the whole time. They've been listening 30 years or 25 years. Just had somebody say they've been here 3 years. But whatever, it is a family-type relationship to me. And I've mentioned to you that this program is, and this job, is what has provided me the greatest satisfaction and happiness that I've ever experienced, more than I ever thought that I would experience. So I have to tell you something today that I wish I didn't have to tell you. And it's a struggle for me because I had to inform my staff earlier today. I can't escape, even though people are telling me it's not the way to look at it. I can't help but feel that I'm letting everybody down with this. But the upshot is that I have been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer. Diagnosis confirmed by two medical institutions back on January 20th. First realized something was wrong on my birthday weekend, January 12th. And I wish I didn't have to tell you this. And I thought about not telling anybody. I thought about trying to do this without anybody knowing, because I don't like making things about me. But there are going to be days that I'm not going to be able to be here because I'm undergoing treatment or I'm reacting to treatment. And I know that that would inspire all kinds of curiosity with people wondering what's going on. And the worst thing that can happen is when there is something going on and you try to hide it and cover it up, it's eventually going to leak, and then people are going to, why didn't you just say it? Why did you try to fool everybody? And it's not that I want to fool anybody. It's just that I don't want to burden anybody with it, and I haven't wanted to. But it is what it is. And you know me, I'm the mayor of Realville. So this has happened, and my intention is to come here every day I can, and to do this program as normally and as competently and as expertly as I do each and every day, because that is the source of my greatest satisfaction professionally, personally. I've had so much support from family and friends during this that it's been tremendous. I told the staff today that I have a deeply personal relationship with God that I do not proselytize about. But I do, and I have been working that relationship tremendously, which I do regularly anyway, but I've been focused on it intensely for the past couple of weeks. I know there are many of you in this audience who have experience this, who are going through it yourselves at the same time. I am at the moment experiencing zero symptoms other than, I don't want to get too detailed in this, what led to shortness of breath that I thought might have been asthma or, I'm 69, could have been my heart. My heart's in great shape, ticking away fine, squeezing and pumping great. It was not that. It was a pulmonary problem involving malignancy. So I'm going to be gone the next couple of days as we figure out the treatment course of action and have further testing done. But as I said, I'm going to be here as often as I can. And as is the case with everybody who finds themselves in a circumstance, you want to push ahead and try to keep everything as normal as you can, which is something that I'm going to try to do. But felt that I had to tell you, because that's the kind of relationship I feel like I have with those of you in this audience. And I say it every Christmas, which is when I feel more thankful than at Thanksgiving. And I feel thankful at Thanksgiving, but Christmas, it really gets to me. But over the years, a lot of people have been very nice telling me how much this program has meant to them. But whatever that is, it pales in comparison to what you all have meant to me. And I can't describe this, but I know you're there every day. I can see you. It's strange how but I know you're there. I know you're there in great numbers. And I know that you understand everything I say. The rest of the world may not when they hear it expressed a different way, but I know that you do. You've been one of the greatest sources of confidence that I've had in my life. So I hope I will be talking about this as little as necessary in the coming days. But we've got a great bunch of doctors, a great team assembled. We're at full speed ahead on this. And it's just now a matter of implementing what we are going to be told later this week. So I'll be back here. I hope you'll be back on Thursday. If not, it'll be as soon as I can. And know that every day I'm not here, I'll be thinking about you and missing you. Thank you very much. Keep coming program today.
James Moss, the conservative's perspective. Well, you just heard it, and I'm going to talk about it. That was Rush Limbaugh from yesterday. At the end of his program, Rush disclosed to his listener family what we just heard was advanced lung cancer. Some places, you know, some outlets say stage four, whatever. The fact is that he has a very serious health issue, in front of him. And when I listened to that yesterday, it was yesterday evening. Finally had a moment to myself and I listened to that, and I was thinking about it. And on August 1st, 1988, which my birthday, on that day, I was 26 years old, way, way back. But also on that day, August 1st, 1988, Rush Limbaugh from Sacramento, California, was syndicated across the United States of America on I think like maybe 28 stations. It was a really small amount. It was a modest thing. But he took that modest thing, his love, because, you know, he was like a lot of guys, he had from that particular generation still, you know, his love affair with radio, and he was no exception. And that was his dream, and he got it. And then, you know, this was a huge day, August 1st, 1988, when he goes out on these 26, 28 stations. And from there, you know, over 30 years, this guy is the king. The king. There are a number, you know, radio happens to be my thing too. Those of you who know me, and in American radio, and I don't know what it's like broadcasting, you know, in the annals of broadcasting history anywhere else, but in American radio, there are a number of pioneers and great men from in front of the microphone and behind. And it doesn't matter if it was in the realm of entertainment, you know, like Orson Welles, or if it was in the realm of news, like Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow, or commentary, news and opinion. Guys like Hannity, guys like Limbaugh, and Limbaugh is the king. Forget about Stern. Forget about Howard Stern. Forget about any of those XM jocks. This guy was the alpha and the omega. And not only to myself, but I know to a lot of guys that just decided one day, you know, I want to do this. And they go out and they do. Okay, maybe they don't do it to the level of Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any of those top tier guys, but that doesn't matter. The point is they were inspired to go out and do it. Maybe they got 8 listeners a week. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. They got out there and they did it. It's something that they love, and I'm no exception. And I'm sure, like a lot of guys, I'm no exception in the fact that Rush Limbaugh has been instrumental. He's not dead yet, and there's no saying that he's going to die anytime soon. But Rush Limbaugh was probably the principal influencing factor in my understanding of what conservatism really meant, of what originalist intent for the Constitution really meant, what limited government really meant, and what the left was trying to do. Now, there were a lot of other people that played into that, and too many to mention, but Limbaugh was the guy. Had the privilege one time, about 20-some years ago, of getting to speak with him, and that was a rare treat. I was a caller, and we had about a 10-minute back and forth, and I enjoyed it tremendously. But every day, think about this, every day, Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, he's there at that microphone telling you what's what, telling you what's going on. Every day. Since 31 years, since 1988. Earlier I said he was like the, I had posted an article when I found out last night, it was a Breitbart article, I think. Because I believe that's where I lifted that clip from, it's from Breitbart. You know, and I was talking to, you know, it was sad news. This guy's had a career like nobody else's. It's going to be difficult for anybody to match his career arc. I really do think that. And what I said last night was, you know, the Babe Ruth of conservative radio. And I've been thinking about that. Maybe not. Maybe he's the Lou Gehrig of talk radio, the Iron Man, the Cal Ripken, you know, just day after day after day, pounding it out, laying it out there. And at the same time, taking all kinds of shots every day. I saw somewhere it was in an article because a lot of people in conservative circles are very dismayed by this. People on the left are overjoyed. I won't get into some of the twits I've read from some of these twats. Some of the tweets I've read from some of these twits. Excuse me. And you know, they're jumping up and down. They're delirious with joy that the guy's going to go through what he's going to go through. And hey, okay, you know, just like Islam, just like Islam is a religion of peace, the leftist ideology is the ideology of tolerance and love and acceptance. But the article said, you know, and there was a lot of dismay and sadness over what's going on with Limbaugh, and it is sad, and it is dismaying. But the underlying tone was, you know, in this fight, people are going to fall, and that's true. They are. They're going to fall. This is a long, protracted struggle. It has been for a long, long time. It's starting to amp up. Really. I'm not exactly sure how amped it's going to get, if it's going to get like, you know, lock and load amped up, or where it's going to go, or if it's just going to be a, you know, an overwhelming can of whoop ass at the ballot box come election day. That's what I would prefer to see. But things are reaching a point of critical mass. And, you know, like any great struggle, we're going to lose people. And, you know, we've got to continue the fight. We've got to soldier on, yeah. We stand on Russia's shoulders, but, you know, it's going to be up to us to carry it from here on out, and rightly so. He's worked hard in this. But it also struck me, and they're right. I can't even remember who wrote the article. It might have been Thomas Lifson, an American thinker. Or Brian Junedeff, one of those guys, from a contributor from over there, because they're big Limbaugh fans like I am. But, and yeah, we do. We need to, you know, we're gonna soldier on. We're gonna stay in the trenches, man. We're gonna be there on the rifle pits. But also, it serves to remind us that there are bigger things. Yeah. Yeah, there are bigger things. Your family, your friends, your life, your neighbors. The well-being, the safety, the prosperity of all those people in your circle. And the well-being and the safety and the prosperity of all those people within their individual circles. Rush Limbaugh is a hell of a guy, and in the radio business, he's the king because he wanted nothing else but to do radio. He got fired 8 different times from different places all across the country. A lot of different, sometimes his fault, sometimes not. Sometimes it just changed formats and you're out. But then he found his niche. And he's, you know, out there in California, he started doing this. He was a regional guy. It caught on. It resonated. And it resonated all the way across the country till that fateful day in August 1988 when he went nationwide with the Rush Limbaugh program. We wish nothing but the best for El Rush, Bo. Okay, well, let's see where we at. Well, they're winding things up. Of course, you know, tonight is the State of the Union address, and tomorrow is the anticipated acquittal of the president in the Senate impeachment trial. I am really interested in tonight. We may knock off a little bit early. I think the president's scheduled to speak at 9. Somebody check on that for me, please. And we may knock off a little bit early. We may get out of here about 8:30, 8:45, so we can get snacked up and heat padded and ottomaned and in the big chair so we can watch. And then I may just listen to it on the radio, but we need to tune it in. It's going to be... Tonight will be the night because, you know, they say, and I'm inclined to agree with it, that the president really wanted his day in court in terms of the Senate trial. He wanted that. He wanted to bring it all out, man, and just let it fall where it was going to fall. But, you know, the House Democrats, the House managers were going to go with that. And the Senate Republicans, again, I'm going to find the right guy to talk to about this, and we're going to figure it out. This was not a real impeachment. It never, ever, ever was a real impeachment. And all these people who are pretending that it was a real impeachment are lying, man. They're lying. Or they're dumbasses. I mean, you can't go... And they might be lying dumbasses. You never know. But it's one of those three. None of them are good. There was no vote. You cannot have a resolution of impeachment without a vote from every member of the House of Representatives. The Republicans, the Democrats, everybody votes. Not certain specific committees, not the committee heads, not the Democrats that are members of these specific committees. Every member of the House of Representatives has to vote. Because that's how you get the articles of impeachment. That's how everybody has a vote on it. And then once everybody is agreed and they have voted upon the articles of impeachment, they've been drawn up, and they say, yeah, okay, we're ready to roll. Let's send this to the Senate. And then Nancy Pelosi, you know, takes it over, and the House managers present their articles of impeachment, and they go on and on and on. They have 24 hours. And you know what they ought to do, by God? They ought to do that at one fell swoop. They ought to just... 24 hours, you get the House manager's presentation on, you know, what they think constitutes the articles of impeachment and why we got to get rid of this dude. Then we're going to take a 24-hour break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to listen to the Republicans, the president's defense team, and their 24 hours. And then we're going to talk it over, we're going to vote, and we're going to move on from this crap. But they're not going to do that. But anyway, 24 hours aside, today they finished up the arguments, and tomorrow there'll be a few foghorn leghorns that want to get up and speechify a little bit. Then they're going to have the vote, and, you know, in all likelihood, the vote is going to be for acquittal. Thereby adding insult to the Democrats' injury. None of this stuff's worked, man. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Democrat implosion, and we're going to talk a little bit about a couple other things as soon as I figure it out. No, we're going to talk about the Democrat implosion. We're going to talk about the impeachment. You know, it's just a flat tire. Also, the Hawkeye caucus, the Iowa caucuses, stunk. We've got some good stuff on that. And speaking of impeachment, Adam Schiff, that pencil neck, lion, bug eyed son of a bitch. He closed out today. Let me find this idiot, nutbag, macaroon, screwball. Holy. Okay, there it is. All right. One of the reasons, again, this is a stellar case in point as to why I use clips and why I don't feel bad about it. I feel bad about it because you get to hear these cats in their own words. Listen to California Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat, crazy bastard.
Though it is clear the founders can sit the highest of all high crimes and misdemeanors, but if it were not impeachable, then a whole range of utterly unacceptable conduct in a president would now be beyond reach. Trump could offer Alaska to the Russians in exchange for support in the next election, or decide to move to Mar-a-Lago permanently and let Jared Kushner run the country, delegating to him the decision whether to go to war.
Okay. We're going to give Alaska back to the Russians. No, he really meant it. he wasn't kidding. He really thinks that the president, in exchange to get reelected, to help get reelected, would give Alaska back to the Russians. Oh my God. Oh, heal me, Jesus. HMJ. This is what I mean about Teeter. But obviously, there's something wrong. There's something wrong, I think, with Fat Jerry the Jowl Nadler. And I think there's really something wrong with Adam Schiff. Now, this thing has failed. I'm looking through my pocket here, which is a great service from Mozilla, from Firefox. But I'm looking through here, and last week, there was all this blockbusting stuff that was going to be earth-shattering should it go to a trial. You know what? It's junk. I'm dumping it. That's how big a nothing burger this thing was. People were inventing – well, they weren't inventing stories out of whole cloth, but the stories that they were releasing, the stories that they were putting out there was showing, you know, just exactly – what sort of flatulence in a whirlwind this whole thing was. Here was the big story. Listen, this is one from last week. This is from Breitbart, very reliable place. Report, Hunter Biden prepping for impeachment testimony. No, I'm not making it up. Hunter Biden is prepping for impeachment testimony, going over every little detail. Think about that. Think about that for just a moment, America. Hunter Biden on the hot seat.
and not worried because he has gone over every little detail. All the protests, 21 state attorneys general submitted a legal brief urging the Senate before this thing even started to just reject the articles of impeachment out of hand. And it's still where I'm at. Again, this was not a legitimate impeachment because there was never, ever, ever a vote of all the members of the House of Representatives to adopt the resolution of impeachment, to ratify, agree to the articles of impeachment. Without, you just can't do it. Nancy Pelosi said, we're going to open up an impeachment inquiry and we're going to do it through Adam Schiff and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Why is she not going through Jerry Nadler and the judiciary? If you can't decree this kind of stuff, the Constitution, these little peck sniffs could be bothered to look at it, tells them exactly what to do. But all these big earth-shattering stories, like, you know what, I need to talk about this. I need to talk about this one here. We need to talk about it. And all of them have come up nothing burgers. Remember how tense it was when Governor Ralph Northam and who's his attorney general or lieutenant governor, one of them, both the guys have been in blackface. I think it's his attorney general. Anyway, the Amos and Andy of Virginia gubernatorial politics, you know, they're establishing hard points in the capital of Richmond. They're worried about the gun crazy Second Amendment people coming down there and shooting up the Capitol, and nothing happened. We were going to talk about that. All these things, all these telling nothing. It doesn't matter now because the Senate voted not to hear any witnesses because we're just going to dispense with this stuff. But my thing, my problem, that which tasks me. It tasks me, and I shall have the answer for it. Why did the Senate even go this far? It was not a legit, it's not real. It was never real. It's not legal. It's not legitimate. It's not any of those damn things. It never happened. But yet Mitch McConnell has that rhino justice, John Roberts, the chief justice, come down, do his thing, and they entertain this. They take it seriously. Why? They didn't have to. That little turtle head Mitch McConnell could have come out and said, Nancy, as far as your articles of impeachment go, pound sand up it, babe. But no, they act like this crap's legitimate. To the extent that, you know, the president and the president had a remarkably competent and effective defense team. But why? I just don't get it, but I'm going to find out. And like I said, it's check and don't take my word for it. That's the way impeachment's always been done. There's a full vote. You draw up the articles. All that's done. The House, the whole House, the entire House is in agreement one way or another. And, you know, if they're in agreement to go ahead and go through with this, then the articles go to the Senate. The Senate holds the trial. There was no vote. But you got all these constitutional peck sniffs, these talking heads telling you this is exactly the way it works. No. These guys are liars. You are listening to Conservatives Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it twice a week live, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have a recorded version of the show that goes out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern time on on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, I'm going to tell you, you should be. The very best, the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Okay, I'm going to grab something to drink. We're going to chill out for a little bit. I'm going to figure out what else we're going to talk about. And we will be back with more of ACP right after this.
A movement like we've never seen in the history of our country. Wisconsin is Trump country.
And that's what this fight is all about. We're taking on the failed political establishment and restoring government of, by, and for the people. It's the people. You're the people. You won the election.
We love this country. We love Donald Trump.
Promises made, promises kept.
We support President Trump.
This is epic.
Donald Trump is our president!
With every last ounce of heart and hope and sweat and soul, we are going to make our stand. We are going to stand for liberty. We are going to stand for justice. We are going to stand for freedom. And we are going to stand for the sacred rights given to us by the hand of Almighty God. You joined our movement, the greatest movement in the history of our country. You protected your family. You defended your dignity. You recaptured your destiny. And you took back your country with that great election 2.5 years ago. We are one united movement, one united people, and one United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
You have always been loyal to this nation. Now you finally have a president who is loyal to you. Every day between now and November 2020, we are going to keep on working, we are going to keep on fighting, and we are going to keep on winning, winning, winning. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. Thank you.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just inspiring words there from the president. Who's going to be speaking here in about an hour and change? James Bostic, Conservative's Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. And I have got a rattle, mild, subtle rattle in the back of my throat that I've had for the last day or so, and I am fearful of what it may portend. Good to be here with you. We do this live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a recorded version of the show that goes out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com, the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. And if you aren't listening, you should be. And that's all there is to that. Still kind of bummed out over the Rush Limbaugh deal, man. I still do. He's the king of this kind of thing, and I don't think there's a guy in the talk radio or the podcasting business who doesn't, you know, who hasn't looked at Limbaugh and went, man, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to be. And I'm no exception, you know, but this, still, the guy's a giant. I know that my prayers and well wishes go out to him as with so many others. So I don't know yet. I meant to check during the music break there, and I didn't get a chance if they've closed up shop in the Senate for the night. It's, you know, they got to get ready for the speech. So they probably have wound things up, and we probably will hear soon a little bit. But I already played you that clip, crazy shift, talking about he's going to give back Russia. He's going to give back Alaska to the Russians. That's what these guys, that's what they're saying. That's what these guys, that's all these guys have. That's all these guys have. There has been, and just think about it, every single thing that they've wadded up, you know, they've blown up all these different balloons. And that's it. They were just balloons. Because once you pricked them, pow, it was nothing but air. There was no substance to any of it. None of it. And tonight, for a change, the president will have his bully pulpit, and he can speak at length as to the successes and the accomplishments that his administration has brought about, not only, you know, in this last year, but in the last 3 years, because all these things contribute to a strong union. And then tomorrow the Senate acquits him. We don't want to become overconfident by any stretch of the imagination. We don't want to be in that place where we, you know, we've lulled ourselves into a false sense of security. But the impeachment thing, you know, he's going to be acquitted. I'm going to go so far as to say that it may be, and I think it probably has a better than 80-85% chance of being a bipartisan acquittal. In other words, there'll be Democrats that vote for acquittal too. At great peril, but they will. And then after this is done, the president is acquitted, and it is back to business as usual with the Democrats huffing and puffing and trying to blow everybody's house down and fuming. But at some point, stuff's got to boomerang. And we may see it here with something that Rand Paul was talking about on Neil Cavuto's show. Let me find this, Rand. Yeah, that would be under R for Cavuto. Let's see. He's one of the few guys talking about this. And you know, even though there aren't that many guys making these noises, Rand Paul's a pretty influential guy, and I think it's a positive thing that we hear him talking about it. So this is, I guess it's from yesterday too. Rand Paul, Fox Business News, with Neil Cavuto.
Senator, always good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
How do you think it will go? Do you know of any Republicans who would vote to convict? And do you know of any Democrats who would not?
I don't think there'll be any Republicans voting to convict, as there were no Republicans voting to impeach. If there's ever been a game where we knew the end result, a foregone conclusion, this is it. I mean, it's been that way since the very beginning. And the Democrats plowed on, and I think they plowed on because they wanted to try to damage him in the election. They actually explicitly said, many of them, that they feared they couldn't beat him unless they're able to use the government or abuse the government, the apparatus of government, the apparatus of impeachment to damage him. And that's the ultimate irony here. They accused the president of using government to go after a political rival, and they did exactly the same to the tune of millions of dollars. They did it with Mueller. They've done it with this. They even went after the president before he was elected and began spying on him through the FISA courts, which they've now been rebuked for. So this is really, there really has never been a president where there's been this much partisan energy and malevolence.
You know, Senator, you got caught up in this as well. I had an opportunity the other day to talk to your dad, Ron Paul, and raise this issue of Chief Justice Roberts refusing to let you ask a question. This was your dad weighing in on that. Do you think then that the Chief Justice was acting on Democrats' behalf when he didn't let Rand Paul, you know, speak? Or at least ask the question?
I think he was acting on his own behalf, but, you know, I think that he still has sort of a bias that encouraged him to do this, because why should they? Eventually, they name the person. Everybody knows the name of the whistleblower, and the whistleblower is crucial.
Have you had any contact with the Chief Justice since all of that?
No, I've only had one time where I got to ask the Chief Justice a question, and there was a dinner here in town a couple years ago, and he talks about how the Chief Justice should be a judge, and I mean like an umpire, and shouldn't put their hand on the scale. And I said, well, you know, if you believe that the government is right in a tie, if you presume constitutionality like you did in the Obamacare case, isn't that like putting a thumb on the scale? Because, you know, Obamacare was ended up being ruled unconstitutional according to being a regulation, and then Justice Roberts out of whole cloth says, oh, well, maybe it's a tax, and if I can imagine any way in which it's constitutional. So I'm really on a different wavelength from him in sort of believing that we should let the government do whatever they want. I guess that is except for ask questions. The question I asked didn't name anybody to be the whistleblower, didn't accuse anybody. It talked about Adam Schiff's team, and it talked about friends of theirs at the National Security Council, and I count six of them who knew each other, and now there are accusations that they'd been talking about the impeachment for well over a year, that they came to Adam Schiff and planned this in advance, and I think that's a real problem, and they should be made to answer for that.
Sounds like you weren't a big fan of his or how he handled this whole matter. Am I leaping there or what?
Yeah, you know, I think the question should have been asked, but I went ahead and took it to the public. The public knows the question I asked, and I think it is important that it be asked. I think it's also important for people who are for whistleblowers to examine their own beliefs. Look, Chuck Schumer has talked about, you know, putting Edward Snowden in jail for life. Edward Snowden's probably the greatest whistleblower of all time. He revealed something that no one else revealed and that was unconstitutional. The whistleblower in this case revealed something that 400 people already knew. The whistleblower's boss knew it. If it were true whistleblowing, his boss would be in trouble for not revealing it. No, it was a matter of opinion. Vindman's boss said the phone call was fine. So did about 300 of the 400 people, or maybe 380 of the 400 people thought it was fine, and 20 or 30 people maybe objected to it on policy grounds. That's not a whistleblower. So that's different than Edward Snowden, who brought forward documents to say, look, they're spying on all the Americans. And so this is still caught up in something I'm very interested in, and I'm going to be talking to the president more and more over the next few weeks about we've got to do something to prevent FISA from ever getting involved in American political campaigns again. No secret court should ever be involved in politics on either way, either side of the aisle.
As you know, Senator, your colleague Mitt Romney has been disinvited to the next CPAC gathering. Because of his push for witnesses, and Susan Collins, as far as I know, was not treated the same way. What do you think of that?
You know, that's up to them, but I wouldn't criticize people who choose to take a stand. It's not easy to take an unpopular stand, and I told Senator Romney I've been there before. I've been one of the few standing up and saying I don't want another war with Iran, or I don't think we got to keep sanctioning Russia till the end of time. So I've been an outlier before, and I know what it takes. And you don't do it because it's actually not easy to be that unpopular sometimes within your own caucus. So I disagree with him on this. I think the president shouldn't be impeached. I think we were done. And actually, I think he may well vote against impeachment in the end. I'm not speaking for him, but I don't fault him for having a strongly held position, particularly when it's one that's very, very hard to have and very unpopular. That's a difficult thing to do in Washington, and you know, I think that's definitely his right.
Senator Rand Paul, thank you very much.
We hear it all the time. We hear it on both sides. There ought to be a law. Somebody needs to look into this. We need to check this out. You know, what's the correlation? And, you know, there probably ought to be a law. You know, maybe most likely there probably already is a law. And if we, you know, if we could find it, and then, you know, but nobody wants to bring these cats to book for anything. Where's me out? Now, we've got William Barr. And we've got John Durham. We'll see what goes on with that. I better talk about Iowa here. The Iowa caucuses took place last night as well, and this is supposed to be a big deal. Now, the reason it's supposed to be a big deal is because, you know, it's Iowa, it's the heartland. It is looked at as representative of a pretty fair cross-section of American demographics, of America. And, you know, every year Republicans, in this case it was Democrats, they go there and they eat pancakes. And they milk cows, and they walk around in plaid flannel shirts, and they talk about how they're for the people, and they go to diners, and they eat bratwurst, and they do all these things that they don't do, okay? It's not in their character to do. Bernie Sanders, yeah. Bernie Sanders, milking a cow, right. Pete Buttigieg, milking a cow, right, sure. Walking around in a plaid flannel. So, again, a lot of theatrics, a lot of pandering. I've got to hit the mute button here because I got to cough a little bit. But it's made to be important. And the Democrats, you know, they treat it as important. And they've been doing it for a while now. I think close to 50 years. It's been around a while. Well, last night, you know, they're doing the caucus. And how it works, there are these things called alignments. You have the first alignment and the second alignment. And it's kind of a weeding out process. And, you know, the first alignment, everybody votes for their candidate. Well, not all the candidates are going to make the cut, if you know what I mean. So then you got to... Of that second cut, if your guy didn't make it, then you gotta pick another candidate that you want to support, or you don't vote at all. So this year, Iowa's pretty important. It's pretty important for Joe Biden because Joe's having trouble. All this stuff that's come out about Hunter. And the deals not only in Ukraine, but in Kazakh, in Russia, in China, here in the United States. We've talked about a lot of that stuff, and we've heard Pete Schweitzer himself talk about it. And Bernie Sanders, we've got to talk about Bernie Sanders for a minute. Bernie Sanders is doing okay. But here's the problem. The DNC is uncomfortable with Bernie doing okay. And we got two spins on this. And I think that's probably what we're going to close out the show with. We got two spins on this. One comes from our pal Sundance at Conservative Treehouse. Kind of weedy, but you know that's how those cats roll. And there's a lot of merit to what they got going on. But sometimes, though, I feel like Rod Serling when I read some of this stuff from Sundance. From the DNC club's perspective, there were three strategic needs concerning the Iowa caucuses. Number one, and when they say the DNC club, they're talking about the establishment DNC, the corporate DNC. The first thing they want to do is they want to hide the collapse in the polls of Joe Biden. They want to diminish the wins by Bernie Sanders. And the third thing they want to do, or they need to do, is to cover up a less than enthusiastic voter turnout. Now, given the nature of very public primary races like this, it's tough to have all this happen, you know? But guess what? You know, it's almost impossible for this to happen, really. Almost. If everything just seemed to collapse,
go wrong, become a mess. And if the end of the night outcomes could be stonewalled and they could be delayed and undetermined, well, in that particular scenario, with nobody knowing what the vote counts are, those three things we talked about, number one, hiding the collapse of Joe Biden, number two, minimizing this win by Bernie Sanders, and three, covering up over weak voter turnout, we could say mission accomplished. And guess what? That exact scenario just coincidentally happened last night. By God, it did. I'm not making it up. Despite the news media telling everybody who would listen that Joe Biden was leading the field for the last 6 months during the impeachment narrative, Joe Biden probably came in about fourth, maybe fifth. He may not have gained any delegates at all in Iowa, but no one's going to pay any attention to that now. It's over. And few will question how the media polling could have got it so wrong. Well, here's how they get it so wrong. They lie. And at the same time, Bernie Sanders can't stand on a stage, declare victory, and receive the praise earned in 2020 that was robbed from him in 2016. No voter results means no grand victory for Bernie and no momentum. Now, you know, probably sometime today, if they haven't already, they'll kind of say that Bernie won, but meh, it's over now. It doesn't deliver the same type of electoral value. Let's take a look at the turnout, too. That's another thing that we're going to talk about. And I've got another article from John Nolte at Breitbart about that. But the media have been hyping the Democrats, just absolutely chomping at the bit, rip-roaring, ready to go, just drowning in buckets of enthusiasm because they cannot wait to defeat the orange man. Well, they've been pumping this thing up for over a year. They've been building it, and they've been building it for Iowa to this exact moment last night when such an incredible turnout would have been clearly visible. It was not. So what happened instead with no vote totals? All the candidates claimed victory, and now they're moving on to New Hampshire. They're going back up into New England. Now, the Democrat Party there in Iowa is saying one of the reasons for this whole snafu is with this app that they use, this thing that was supposed to make it so easy and so accurate. Now, the tech company responsible for this app, let's see here, let's find out. Let me do a little. Hope I don't lose you, because you know what happens when we do this crap sometimes. Oh, well. Ah, it's hard to say. Anyway, this company who set up the counting app, this projection app, is connected to the Clinton DNC people. And Clinton DNC people, they're plugged in, and I better not use it. I better not say it that way. They're plugged into Buttigieg, but you know they have a connection there. I don't know what it is, but they have that going on for them. And now that we know all this, it's not going to change a thing. We just know it. But it's all theater, and I guess because of who these people are that are running these
these unprincipled, pandering, plagiarizing, ambitious, calculating politicians, these Democrats, these progressives, have nothing but the theater. Stop and think about it. That's all they have. That's all they have to cling to. See, over on our side, we can cling to guns and the Bible. And I would say, you know, in the clinging business, those are probably a couple of pretty good choices to hold on to, especially this day and age. But no, the Democrats cling to the theater because they have no substance. Joe Biden's presidential campaign is organized astroturf, but he's got to keep up appearances as a leader. Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg, both of them inauthentic posers, but they've got to hang around and pick up Biden's supporters so that they can keep Bernie in check. Meanwhile, the Democrat National Committee boardroom will do whatever is needed to try and forestall Sanders and defend against a hostile takeover. It's only going to get uglier. Not dead air getting a drink. And this evening, it is Cran Pineapple. Yeah. Killer. Now, what astonishes me about this is that the DNC, apparently they have the stones. We can't say that they have the brains. But to just blatantly, straight up, run this play again on Bernie Sanders people. See, that was the breakdown on the whole superdelegate thing. You know, they used the superdelegates in the convention right away. Immediately, first round, because they wanted to make sure that they could just dismiss the threat that Bernie's candidacy had to Hillary Clinton, and they did, and I mean we don't know in the long run. Yeah, it was probably going to be Hillary, but Bernie probably had a better shot than what they arranged for him, and his supporters have not forgotten that. Those guys know what's going on. When they see the Democrat National Committee changing rules at the last minute so Mike Bloomberg can dump a bunch of money and get in and make the debates where he didn't make any debates before, where they stick to the story that, you know, Biden's the guy, no matter what's happening, no matter how bad he's tanking in the polls, and it's going to get worse. The more this stuff comes out about how he has worked for decades to enrich himself and his family, hi. But again, he's got to keep up appearances. How ugly is it going to get with these guys? Because the Democrat Party is in implosion. It's in free fall, not just from the standpoint of rigging, you know, the nominating process, fixing it either for Biden or for Elizabeth Warren. But I don't think they want Elizabeth Warren either, because she's just as big a socialist and nationalizing, take over your crap, commie type pinko fag as Bernie Sanders is. So it's going to get ugly. And we can see how ugly it's going to get because look how hard the Democrat National Committee has worked to control the outcome in Iowa. They just shut the damn thing down, man. That's never happened. That didn't happen with paper ballots. That didn't. You know, that's never happened. The Democrat National Committee is meddling in its own election. But nobody's getting excited about that. But of those three, you know, that they were talking about, the three objectives that they – oh, and this app, you know, the Homeland Security people, the cyber security people at the Homeland Security Department, hey, you know, if integrity is genuinely a concern, let us take a look at the system and we'll see, you know, how reliable it is for you. Nah, we're good. We're good. No, thanks. Would not let them. Refused to allow Homeland Security to review this voting app. And it's this voting app and some kind of coding issue within this voting app that allegedly is the reason that they waited till 4 o'clock this afternoon to get these results. Again, paper ballots, hand counted. You know, they got to doing it the old timey way. They could have done so much easier and probably a lot more reliably than this rigged. They get a tech company to give them this app, and these guys are tight with the Clintons. So yeah, every third vote for Bernie, we're going to make it a vote for Joe Biden. It's just an algorithm we dump in there. Everybody thinks their vote is going to work. This is how we do it. And that way they can control. You know, they don't want to see Sanders in there. Believe me, the money Democrats don't want to see Sanders in there because he is really what he says. He's not a phony. He's not a fake. He's an honest to God commie. All right. I mean, the cat spent his honeymoon in Moscow, for crying out loud. What do you want? I mean, short of Lee Harvey Oswald, who's a bigger dead giveaway? Gosh, all right. But the real story vote totals, the voter turnout, the numbers on the Democrat side. It just not happened. For this year, for the 2020 Iowa caucus, the voter turnout was pretty much the same as it was 4 years ago in 2016. And that was around 175,000. That is not a good number. That is a terrible number, according to those folks in the know. And it's also the kind of number that foretold Hillary Clinton's 2016 loss to Donald Trump. Now, if we go back to 2008, which was prior to 2016, the most recent up for grabs Democrat primary, not involving an incumbent president, 250,000 Democrats turned out between in the contest when it came down to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. That was a record high. I'm sorry. 240,000. They're not coming out. They say that only about 32% of Iowa caucus voters, a third, were voters caucusing for the first time. So younger folks. Only about a third of them. Again, that's not good. What that means is that there's just no enthusiasm among the younger voters in Iowa in terms of the candidates that they got to pick from. And rightly so. They're all stale. They're all the same thing. They're all cookie cutters. They're all tax and spend. They're all big government. They're all anti-individual. It is an ideology that is collectivist. They reject the individual. I mean, it's oppressive. Everything is collective with the progressives, with the left. There's no room, there's no place for the individual, the person who you are, the person who I am. No, there's no place for that. And that's, I guess, you know, right there. What other reason do you need to reject this ideology, this political belief system right there? But there are a million other things, don't get me wrong. There are a million other reasons why, but ultimately that's it. It is a question of individuality. It is a question of individual liberty and personal responsibility. And that's an ideology that abhors those things. So voter turnout is down because even the Democrats, especially the young Democrats, think that their candidates suck. These guys don't bring anything to the table. Nothing. I don't think, and I could be wrong, and I'm sure there are probably better examples from sharper heads in history than mine. But I don't think I have ever, I don't know that there, history ebbs and flows, you know, there are peaks and valleys and blah, blah, blah. But in American history, I don't know that I have ever seen a more historic blowout. And when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about just a complete deflation, of a political party than what we're seeing with the Democrats right now. Pro-choice Democrats, guys like Pete Buttigieg, are telling pro-life Democrats that there's no room for them in the Democrat Party. No, I'm not making it up. The pro-choice people are saying, you know, the pro-choice Democrats are saying, screw you, pro-life. Yeah, you're a Democrat, but you're a pro-life Democrat, so screw you. What's going to happen to those people? Are they going to vote Democrat regardless? Are they going to hold their nose and vote for Joe Biden or vote for Elizabeth Warren or worse, Bernie Sanders? Are they gonna do some of them? Yeah, probably will. But I would say the odds are that many of them will not. They may not vote at all. Or they may turn around and they may vote for Donald Trump, the first president in American history to address pro-life groups. My thing is, anybody with eyes, hell, even some people without eyes, Ray Charles, for example, Stevie Wonder, Ronnie Millsap, could see that the Democrat Party is totally fixed, man. It's rigged, stem to stern. Now, they're going to phase Bernie out. The DNC is basically going to come to the point to where somebody's going to, you know, there's going to be a phone call, there's going to be a meeting, and somewhere along the line, somebody's going to say, I'm afraid we can't let you do that, Bernie. and here's why. And he's going to get shafted again. He's probably going to get paid off just like he got last time. Okay? You guys, they don't return the money from political campaigns. Whatever's left over is left over. They don't write, you know, they don't return it. They don't divvy it up between all the donors that gave, they keep it. All right? And that's why Bernie's got, he's got three houses. One of them lakefront in I think it's Vermont, is where he's, you know, it's his digs. But he's not going to get the nomination. And he's going to take the money. But he's not going to say anything to his supporters who see very clearly what's happening again. Now, those people, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if that scenario plays out and Bernie is phased out over the next couple of months, where they just fix it, just like it did last time. See, after the last convention, they moved that the superdelegates would be used in the second round of voting, where they could bring this thing to a head and get the nomination process over and get moving with beating the orange man. Well, they moved him back to the first rank. Bernie's not going to have a chance. And I don't, you know, he'll probably do okay in the New England states. He should do okay in New Hampshire. But if the fix is in Iowa, and apparently, you know, I don't care how many eyebrows is raised, nothing's happened. The Federal Election Commission has said, well, you know, we're going to look into this and see what's going on. I'm not aware of any law enforcement agency or election oversight group in the Hawkeye state that's saying, yeah, we better check this out. Nobody. Ah, mother of pearl. Oh, excuse me. My prediction for tonight. There are a few. I think Ocasio-Cortez and Arianna Presley and some other bubblehead House Democrat are boycotting the State of the Union tonight. My prediction is this. No Democrat will applaud the president, except maybe when he comes in. When he starts listing his accomplishments, which would, you know, by rights, if he went through all of them, it would keep him there all night, and that's what he ought to do. Nobody, it doesn't matter what the initiative is and how great it is for the country and how fair-minded the legislation or like I said, the initiative is, they're not going to clap. They're not going to stand up. They're going to do the stone face. Or they'll do the sarcastic thing. You remember that little clap Nancy gave him last year? Nancy Pelosi gave Donald Trump the clap. I didn't mean it like that. That little, you know, smarmy, sarcastic applause. Applause. Not clap. Applause. And you know what? He just kind of nodded, and he never made a big deal out of it and just carried on with what's going on. And I'm thinking, you know, on the eve, if you stop and think about it, because tonight, you know, tomorrow, the acquittal most likely happens. On the eve of Nancy Pelosi's greatest, and not just Nancy's, there are a lot of people in on this. Schiff, Nadler, all the House Democrats that went along with this crap. A lot of talking heads on TV. On the eve of their greatest failure, their most dismal, disappointing loss, the President of the United States is going to come to the Senate, and he is going to speak of success and accomplishment and all of those things that are concomitant with not only making America great again, but keeping America great. No doubt about it. You know, we're down, and he's going to be coming on at 9 o'clock, and you guys, quite frankly, you need a break from me. Before I leave, let me tell you this. Next Tuesday, a couple weeks back, I went to the Rock the Red 2020 inaugural convention in South Carolina down there in Greenville and had an awesome time. Met a lot of terrific people, folks who are going to be guests upcoming on this show. And the next guy that we've got lined up, because I got the confirmation email today, is a fellow by the name of John Guandolo. Now, you've heard me mention Mr. Guandolo's name more than once because he's got some pretty important information when it comes to John Brennan, former director of the CIA. By the way, did you know that in 1976, John Brennan voted for the Communist Party USA's presidential candidate, Slobberin' Gus Hall. By God, he did. And from that ignominious action as a communist sympathizer, he rose to the exalted position of Director Central Intelligence. You tell me how the hell that happens. You just tell me. All right, here we go. And there it is. Interview confirmation from Mr. James Lopez, Epic Quest Media. John Guandolo will be appearing next Tuesday, February 11th, 7 p.m. He's going to be the lead segment. We're going to spend a half hour, hopefully more, if I can get him tied up in some serious questions, with John Guandolo. John Guandolo is president of, he's president and founder of a group called Understanding the Threat. It's the only organization in the country that provides the necessary tools to civic leaders, to police, and citizens of this great country to identify and subsequently dismantle jihadi terrorist networks within their local communities. Guys, they're there. They're out there. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not an aluminum foil hat deal. And through his think tank, Understanding the Threat, John talks with all kinds of foreign governments, our government, concerning, well, his specialty is going to be the global Islamic movement. So he's going to be looking at terrorism and national security from that particular vantage point. He's authored a couple of books. He's an outstanding cat. I got to talk to him at Rock the Red. And I got to talk to him in particular about the revelations that you know, we've talked about when we've gone over John Brennan's life. At some point, when Brennan was station chief, the CIA in Riyadh, Mr. Guandolo contends that he was corrupted and converted. He was turned and converted to Islam. John Brennan. John Guandolo's Naval Academy grad, Marine Corps combat officer. He's been there. He's done it. When he came back, worked with the FBI on counterintelligence and counterterrorism with, again, just like future guest Claire Lopez from the Center of Policy Security, their specialty is jihad. Their specialty is Sharia. And he's going to be talking with us. And he's going to be talking with us about those things. Of course, of particular interest to me is this deal about John Brennan converting to Islam. Had a great conversation with him. I'm going to tell you all this. I'm wrapping it up because we need to get ready for the present. Great conversation with him Saturday afternoon after he spoke at Rock the Red. And I'm really looking forward to what he's got to say. Now, at the time when he made those claims, nobody would back it up. But he told me in conversations there at Rock the Red, since then, You know, there are people who apparently can corroborate this story. John Brennan turns in Riyadh and converted to Islam. And we're going to have a lot of other questions for him. I'm tearing his website apart right now. UTT, understandingthethreat.org, I think. Let me roll through these business cards here. .com. Understandingthethreat.com. Check it out. A couple essays there. He's a talented speaker, remarkably well-informed. And, you know, I'm not going to bring you guys anything but the best. No junk. No junk. We get, you know, we get the very best guests that I can get. And John Guanella is not going to be any exception. All right. Go get the microwave popcorn. Grab the Twinkies, the Taco Bowls, the Diet Coke, whatever you're going to be loading up on to check out the president. He's coming on, I'm sure, at 9 o'clock. That's usually when they do this stuff. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, listening. Again, next Tuesday, John Guandolo here, Conservative's Perspective, going to be promoting the Living Daylights out of that one. We will be here Thursday as well, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because that's what we do Tuesdays and Thursdays live here with the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We'll see you on Thursday, Lord willing, and River Don't Rise, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.